Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, what's cracking? Welcome to Friday and welcome to the Daily Jungle. Now, it may be Friday, but there is still tons to clean up from Thursday, like that sideshow that went down in Nevada yesterday. Hard to find the biggest clown from that parole hearing, but I've got thoughts on what I heard and what I saw and what's next for the juice. Also, Hugh Freeze out at Ole Miss for dialing up the pros. Not surprising that he went down, but I am surprised how he went down. Plus, three great guests, Yogi Roth of the Pac-12 Network, Mike Freeman of Bleacher Report, and Milwaukee Brewers third baseman Travis Shaw. So, plenty to get to before the weekend officially starts. Alvin, do us all a big fat favor and roll that thing right now. Here is something that I am not surprised to be saying. Let me repeat that. I am not surprised to be saying this. Hugh Freeze resigned yesterday as the Ole Miss head football coach. Here's something I never thought that I would say, however. He resigned yesterday as the Ole Miss head football coach because, according to Yahoo Sports, quote, the school found at least one call from the coach to an escort service on his school-issued cell phone. Let me repeat that. Hugh Freeze resigned because he made at least one phone call to an escort service on a school-issued cell phone. Given that that school is under investigation for 21 violations, I certainly could have seen Freeze resigning because of the violations, but I never imagined it would be for calling an escort service from a university phone. And that's not even the most insane part. To fully appreciate this entire story, let's go back to last week when Yahoo Sports asked the school about a telephone call at 8:34 p.m. on January 21st, 2016, to a Detroit number that is linked via various websites to a Florida-based escort service. Now, that call surfaced as part of a lawsuit by former coach Houston Nutt, who is suing the school in part because of a smear campaign against him. Freeze tells or told Yahoo he had no idea why that one-minute call to the escort service was on his record. He said, quote, I've got no idea. To be honest, I was in an 813 area code, and that was a 313 number. I think that might have been a misdial. I don't think there was even a conversation. There's nothing to it. End quote. Ha ha. The old misdialed the hooker excuse. These aren't my drugs. I'm just holding them for a friend. Can't believe that Freeze went with that line. You just happened to misdial an escort service. What terrible, terrible luck. What the hell are the chances? You misdialing an escort service. Yet notice how nobody ever misdials a plumber or a baker or an electrician or just a person or a number that was out of service. Nope. My man just somehow, some way, very unluckily, got himself an escort service. I just want to repeat also that as dumb as his original excuse was, it's still not dumber than the fact that he did it on a university-issued phone. My man wasn't just calling up pros. He was doing it from a university-issued phone. Somewhere, Bobby Petrino is rubbing road rash cream all over his face and laughing at Freeze's stupidity. Petrino wrecking his hog with his 24-year-old mistress, 25, on the back of it, looks downright savvy compared to Freeze using a university-issued phone to call escort services, paying by check, and leaving some signed merch. Didn't want any of that? And before you say it was only a one-minute call, it might actually have been a wrong number, athletic director Russ Bjork said in reviewing his phone records, it revealed, quote, a pattern of conduct, end quote. And that there would be no buyout or settlement because they were invoking the, quote, moral turpitude clause in his contract. So in other words, if he was not going to resign, he was going to get fired. He also added, quote, he admitted that conduct to us. None of us are perfect. Nobody in this room is perfect. I think we need to respect how he resigned and respect his privacy, end quote. To which I say, okay, yes, yes, and hell no. Okay, that he admitted his conduct to you. Yes, none of us are perfect. Yes, nobody in that room is perfect. But as for respecting how he resigned, oh, hell no. He's resigning because he was caught calling prostitutes from a university phone. What is there to respect about that? Especially since Freeze really wanted everybody to know that he's a man of faith. Let's not forget, an Ole Miss recruit last season was asked by an SB Nation, or asked by SB Nation, about the negative recruiting that was being done against Ole Miss in light of the NCAA investigation. That recruit said, quote, "Well, Coach Freeze told me, when you're that big and out there with faith in Christ, he's like, what do you expect? Jesus got nailed to the cross," end quote. Hey, I really hope that was a miscommunication, because I don't want to believe that Hugh Freeze was comparing Ole Miss to Jesus or himself. And before anybody thinks about praising the school for their decision, let's remember they stood by him when the school was hit with 21 recruiting violations. Also worth noting, Houston Nutt's role in this is incredible as well. The Nutt Man himself was accused of having an affair and of exchanging more than 1,000 text messages in less than 2 months with a local news anchor. And that if Freeze had simply apologized to the Nutt for that smear campaign, probably none of this even comes to light. But he didn't. So, in the end, what is the moral of this story? That the undefeated, undisputed, heavyweight champion of the history of the world is sex. Oh, and if you're looking to continue to bang everybody over the head with your faith and still insist on pursuing hookers, next time, at least have the common sense to do it with a burner phone. Oh, and one more thing, never, ever mess with or smear the Nutt. What a freaking buzzkill. And just 6 weeks before they open their season against Alabama, no head coach, no bowl game this season, and a total lack of institutional control. What a buzzkill. But you think that's going to stop all those tents from going up in the Grove? Hell no. And most importantly, now the Mississippi Queen will have a legitimate excuse for her day drinking.
My favorite thing about the Grove, hands down, is the alcohol. It's not always free, but it's always there. So yeah, alcohol, hands down. Answer your question. Next question.
Okay, but you can get that at the Square, right?
My favorite thing about the Grove is getting to meet people and see everyone from other schools that you know, and you run into people, and it's, I don't know, it's just fun. It's like a big party. And
to, to me, it sounds like you don't care that much about school spirit.
I love school spirit, but like, let's not get me wrong. Like, I wouldn't have school spirit without a couple of vodka waters.
Rock on. She's still the queen. Mike Freeman. Mike, good morning. What's going on? How are you?
Jim, I'm sorry. I'm putting my burner phone away real quick for, a call I got to make later.
It's a very good move. What do you make of a guy, Mike? Seriously. Hey, Mike, what's up? How you doing?
Good.
What's popping, Twitter? What do you make of a guy
crazy
like that making phone calls?
I know the NFL guy, Jim, but that is one of the craziest stories I have ever heard. How are you calling, making those calls from your office phone? It's your office phone. You're like, somebody's going to look at those records. That's crazy.
Hey, Mike, it's got nothing to do.
It has
nothing to do with you being an NFL guy. You are just a guy, period. Hey, look, I don't condone it. Let's be very clear about this. I do not condone this guy, especially a man of faith, as he is purported to be, calling hookers. I'm not condoning that on any level. But to do it from a university-issued telephone, is anybody that stupid?
Apparently he is. And I got to say, too, just from reading up on him, how he was always sort of flaunting that Christian part of him. And my goodness, while he was telling people this stuff, he was on the phone calling whoever.
Hookers.
So this, I mean, and you know how I feel about college football, like college sports, but the NCAA's garbage, and the coaches are full of crap. At least in the NFL, they're upfront about their debauchery. In college, those guys, like, they act like, these coaches act like they're these institutions of great moral standing, and they're horrible. Sorry, Jim, I'm going off on a tangent, but they're horrible. The NFL, at least, they know what they are. Like, they know they're greedy. They know there's some dudes that are just should not be in the NFL. The coaches know they're in it for the cash. Like, they're upfront about what they do.
Now, if you're a scumbag, be honest about it.
Phony.
Clones, I need a second to talk to you about Ferguson. Ferguson helps facilities pros by supplying innovative and reliable products, but what Ferguson really offers are solutions. Ferguson has a dedicated team of facilities experts, and with nationwide coverage, we deliver directly to your facility right when you need them. Plus, Ferguson's broad inventory of maintenance, repair, and operations products, along with plumbing, HVAC, and appliances, sets Ferguson apart from traditional facility suppliers. So learn more about how Ferguson Facility Supply can help your facility at Ferguson.com today. That's Ferguson. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. Mike Freeman joining us. All right, Mike, I know that said, it's also not necessarily on your beat, but what was your reaction to the sideshow that was the O.J. Simpson parole board hearing yesterday?
I thought one of the best parts of when the O.J. said, what was the phrase you used, Jim, where he was talking about how he hadn't really been involved in any really horrible things for a while.
He has basically a conflict-free life.
Conflict
is that the one you're reaching for?
Conflict-free life.
Conflict. Yes. Yeah. I mean, I'm not I'm not exactly sure what the literal definition of conflict is, but I would say what he did would meet it. And it was like, I don't know how you felt, Jim. It was like going back in time watching that, right? Like, you and I both lived that trial. For people who don't know, like, that was one of the more intense moments in really recent television history. Watching that whole thing, it was riveting. And in seeing that was the parole hearing, it sort of brought you back. And that was a rough time in American history. There was a lot of racial divide, and O.J. sort of took advantage of that. And now here we are, and he's living the, what was the phrase again, Jim?
Basically a conflict-free life.
A conflict-free life, yes. So
right.
That was my reaction. When that was said, I almost threw something at my television. I mean, I guess he served his time, and he's going to, you know, everyone deserves a. Oh, never mind.
Yeah, right.
I can't even
he's basically living a conflict-free life, and Hugh basically misdialed that hooker. All right. So let us shift.
You know,
over.
When I misdial people, it's usually like the pizza delivery place.
This is what I said earlier. What is that? I mean, and nobody ever misdials a plumber or a baker or the pizza place, but he just so happened to misdial a hooker. I mean, what are the chances? What an unlucky dude. All right. Shifting over. Mike Freeman joins us. Shifting over to Ezekiel Elliott. What do you make of the report, Mike, that the alleged victim and the witnesses in that Sunday night incident suddenly are not cooperating with the Dallas police?
Jim, are we shocked by this?
No. No, we're not.
I mean, the minute I saw that, I thought that was definitely going to be the case. And people are going to start disappearing. And the overall thing with that is, you really, if you're Ezekiel Elliott, he doesn't seem to get, or at least care. It's a whole new ball game when you leave. No matter, even if you play in a really great, highly visible program like Ohio State, when you go into the NFL, it's 1,000 times worse in terms of the how many people are watching you, the repercussions of the things you do. Little things are sort of blown up, and it sounds like in the bar, like he was defending someone, but it doesn't matter. He's shown a pattern for not really caring about the repercussions or understanding what will happen when you do something. In the NFL, they are watching. Everyone's watching. The team's watching. Your teammates are watching. There's always some guy out there in a bar who says, I'm going to go punch Ezekiel in the face because I'm badder than he is. And it was one of the things that I was covering the NFL for so long, and one of the things Michael Strahan, Hall of Famer, always told me that. He was always cautious about when he went out, because somebody was always trying to make a name for themselves using him. And Elliott's got to understand that. And I know for a fact, I mean, this is not like crazy breaking news, but teammates have told him, try to really caution him about going out. And when the NFL's watching you the way the NFL's watching him right now and reviewing cases right now with him, just stay home, watch a movie, watch Star Trek like Jim does every night, like me. Dude, just chill.
Man, keep my name out of your mouth, Mike. I know I've never seen Star Trek. You know I would never do that. And you keep Star Trek and my name both out of your mouth. You know I would never do that, Mike. You know for a fact I would never do that.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I did until you said
that. There's nothing wrong with there's nothing wrong every now and then, especially when you're under the microscope right now, to just kind of chill. I'm not saying a 20-something-year-old can't go out. Of course you can go out, but chill a little bit at certain times.
You know what I'm saying? I'm saying, Mike Freeman joining us, I'm saying it's not the best idea. I'm not saying you can't go out. I'm saying it's not the best idea. And why? For two reasons. The one that you made about Mike Strahan and the point that he made, that every bar has one. Every single bar has one. 99% of the people out there might be happy to see you and might want to have a good time, but all it takes is one, and every single bar has one. And then the flip side of that, every single person in the world right now is a TMZ reporter with that phone that they can roll video with. So, yeah, you know what? It's not a great idea to go to a bar.
Your second point you made was a really good one about how everyone has their little phone and watching you and recording you. That's a great point.
All my points are great points, Mike. You know that. You and I have done this for a long time.
Your Star Trek one was not great.
No, that was the best point I've made in quite some time, actually. All right, so we the problem with this guy is he just doesn't get it. Hopefully he figures it out sooner than later. And to your other point, which is a very good point, his own teammates are pulling him aside and saying, come on, man, you have to understand what's at stake here. This is not Columbus. Now, let me move on to something quickly, Mike, before you go. Over the weekend, Johnny Manziel said that he was preparing for an NFL comeback. He told the Dallas Morning News that he had, quote, a couple of conversations with some teams, end quote. I know you've been tracking this. How accurate is that? For instance, were teams calling his people or were his people calling teams?
His people were calling teams, mostly. I mean, I think there are GMs and coaches and scouts who see themselves in Johnny Manziel, like not all that athletic and just see themselves in him. And they think what, and you know from being around sports Jim a long time, there's a lot of guys who say I can fix him, and there's a lot of guys thinking that maybe we can get that guy that was in college that was so spectacular. The problem is the guy that was in college was in college, and the guy that was in the pros was lazy, non-athletic, slow, weak arm, didn't study, didn't have the respect of his teammates, didn't take the game seriously, and was a bum. Other than that, he was very good. So he's not the guy in college anymore. He's moved up to a level where everyone is faster, everyone is smarter, everyone works harder, and he never adapted. So that's the problem. And if Johnny Manziel, Jim, gets signed before Colin Kaepernick, I'm going to lose it. I'm going to lose it, and then I'm going to make you watch Star Trek all the time.
Yeah, well,
not happen.
That's not going to happen. Don't worry about that. But to your point about Colin Kaepernick, Robert Griffin III, something you reported, several teams have told you that RG3 is starting to draw mild interest. There's a debate as to whether or not Johnny Manziel is drawing interest. There is no debate. Dan Orlovsky was just signed by the Rams. So what kind of interest is there in Colin Kaepernick right now?
It's with Kaepernick, Jim, it's just there's nothing going on.
So I mean, how do you explain that?
It's I think when I first started writing a lot about Kaepernick, you know, I've talked about this a couple times on your show. I was not that I was on an island, but I didn't have a whole lot of company when I was saying very early on that he was probably not going to play in the NFL again, and he was not going to play because of his protest. That was the core of it, and teams denied it. You saw some other writers were like, no, he'll get signed, but here we are. And Dan Orlovsky, whose claim to fame is running out of bounds in the end zone, just got signed before a guy who played in the Super Bowl and is still very talented. So we have proved to me, I don't know how you feel, we have proven why he's not in the NFL. When you're signing Dan Orlovsky before him and all these other guys, a bunch of stiffs before him, the NFL has made all the statement it needs.
You know, the plan for OJ was pretty simple yesterday. You show up, you show remorse, you do not screw up, you get parole. It was supposed to be pretty straightforward. Very easy. Even the juice could not screw that up, right? It may not have been a full-blown circus, but it was every bit the sideshow that it should have never been. Should have never been. Where would you like to start? How about with Orenthal telling the parole board that he was, quote, basically living a conflict-free life?
I've always thought I've been pretty good with people, and I've basically spent a conflict-free life. You know, I'm not a guy that ever got into fights on the street and with the public and everybody.
He couldn't even get that line out. I mean, I don't know if that was preloaded, if they discussed that. Never mind how hard it was to hear. He could barely say it. I've basically been living a
conflict-free life.
Basically living a conflict-free life. That's basically my favorite athlete quote of all time, ever. That's basically my favorite quote from a human being, dead or alive, ever. Oge is basically living a conflict-free life. Can you hear me, Juice?
Conflict-free life.
Didn't you have a series of domestic violence incidents over a period of several years, if not decades? Weren't you charged with 2 counts of murder? Weren't you convicted of kidnapping, armed robbery, and a number of other charges? But you're basically living a conflict-free life.
Conflict-free life.
Other than lopping off a couple of domes, kidnapping, robbing, and being an all-pro in domestic violence, sure, I would agree. Juice, you're basically living a conflict-free life.
Conflict-free life.
I'm really not sure what's more absurd. Him saying that or the clowns on the parole board not calling him on it. Then you have this number. Quote, nobody has ever accused me of pulling any weapon on them. I never have. Nobody's ever accused me of pulling any weapon on them. I never have. Yet nobody alive has ever accused you of pulling any weapon on them. You've never used a weapon. Yet what about that knife or chainsaw or whatever you were rocking when you showed up at Ron to pay Ron and Nicole that visit? You never pulled a weapon on anyone? Right. And Hugh Freeze accidentally called those hookers. Then there's this. Quote, I realized in my 9 years here that I was a good guy on the street. I was always a good guy.
And I realized in my 9 years here that I was a good guy on the street. I'm sure when Bruce gets here, he'll tell you I was always a good guy.
Yeah, Bruce will tell you, because Bruce is pretty credible. Take Bruce's word for it. One of the low lives I roll with. You're the good guy on the street. If a couple of people are missing their domes, bleeding out and lying in the street, you definitely were not the good guy in the street. Or, quote, I thought I was a good guy. I've had some problems with fidelity in my life, but I've always been a guy that pretty much got along with everybody.
I thought I was a good guy. I had some problems with fidelity in my life, but I've always been a guy that pretty much got along with everybody.
Yeah, I'll give you that, Juice. I know whenever we play word association and somebody hits me with, ready? O.J. Simpson. My response always is, guy gets along with everybody. He had some problems with fidelity, but he gets along with everybody. Just a problem or two of fidelity. And he kills, robs, and kidnaps people. That too. That was absurd, but it was also absurd for him to joke that, quote, I can easily stay in Nevada, but I don't think you guys want me here.
I could easily stay in Nevada, but I don't think you guys want me here.
No comments.
I didn't mean to step on him, Albie. Run that back. Listen to how funny Oge thinks that joke is.
I could easily stay in Nevada, but I don't think you guys want me here.
No comments.
I mean, is this the Lovelock Correctional Institute or the Laugh Factory? Was that a parole board hearing to determine if you'll be released from prison or an open mic night? Do not forget to tip your waitress. Except he wasn't even the biggest joker there. That title either goes to the moron on the parole board who said that OJ was 90, or the one who told OJ's daughter, don't worry, we're nervous too. Or the one who wore a Kansas City Chiefs tie to the hearing. Seriously, dude, what the hell were you thinking? Nothing says taking your job seriously like throwing on an NFL team necktie. Was the Bills tie at the dry cleaner? Did you have your gamer, your jersey, that you wanted him to sign afterwards? I'm surprised that guy didn't say, Mr. Simpson, you rushed for 458 yards and 5 touchdowns against my Chiefs. I should tack on 3 more years to your sentence just for slashing our defense like that. So that was an embarrassing performance by just about everybody, from the parole board and from Simpson himself. And yet, as poorly as OJ handled that, he still got over. He still gets out on October 1st. And after that, what does the future hold? Well, according to OJ, noted good guy OJ, quote, right now, I'm at a point in my life that I want to spend time with my family and friends, end quote.
Right now, I'm at a point in my life where all I want to do is spend time with my, as much time as I can with my children and my friends, and I'm not looking to be involved with the media.
What do you mean to tell me? This guy's just going to go home, play golf, and never surface ever again. Sure he's not. This guy's not wired that way. He's the juice. He'll probably jump on Twitter, and it will take all of 30 minutes before some egg hooks him by asking if he killed Bill Walsh. This guy's not going away. He still thinks he's the juice. The Heisman Trophy winner, the NFL star, the movie star, the pitchman, and the sideline reporter. 9 years in the can did not change anything. We could all see that 5 minutes into that hearing yesterday. As I said yesterday, this dude is more popular now than he's ever been before. And that run is his oxygen. He needs it. He lives off of it. Hell no, this guy's not going to stay down and just go away and spend his remaining years quietly with his friends and his family. This cat can't wait to start being the juice all over again. Let's just hope that he doesn't start killing, kidnapping, and robbing all over again.
No comments.
This guy's not going away quietly. This guy's not going to spend time with his family and on the golf course with his friends. This guy cannot wait to be the juice all over again. Yogi Roth, lots to get to. So let me ask you this. I know you're focused primarily on the Pac-12, but as a football analyst, what is your reaction, Yogi, when you hear that Hugh Freeze is resigning from Ole Miss due to a call to an escort service from a university phone and, quote, a pattern of personal misconduct?
Yeah, man. I mean, my reaction is similar to probably a lot of people's. You know, when I look at coaches' jobs, and I learned this when I was coaching, you know, at 22, 23 years old at SC under Coach Carroll, is the role of the coach is to educate, teach, and mentor the next generation of leaders, you know, because it's the current generation of learners. And that's your responsibility. And in big-time college athletics, of course, the pressure is to win and win big and do what you got to do to get that done. But overall, you're not remembered by that. You know, you're remembered by the 105 guys that you impact and the role model that you are. And this last offseason, I spent a ton of time with Chris Peterson, with Clay Helton. You know, you look at what David Shaw does in Stanford, like those are the guys that are impacting beyond the X's and O's. And to me, when something like this comes out with the narrative that he's shaped, obviously around his career, what that he's tried to shape, it breaks your heart because it's beyond the awards. It's beyond, you know, the Heisman Trophy or the draft picks. And I think of guys like Shea Patterson, who was an Elite 11 MVP a couple of years ago, who's obviously the face of that program now. And, he didn't sign up to go through something like this. So you think of Hugh Freeze's family and, you know, what they're going through, it crushes you. And then you remind yourself, you got the role of a coach. You know, it's not just to win. You got to set big-time examples all across the board. And, you know, I don't know all the facts, obviously, but from what we do know, clearly that wasn't the case.
Yogi Roth joining us. I think we know enough to know without knowing all the facts. All right, so yeah. Pac-12 Media Days are next Wednesday and Thursday. Yogi, when you look at the quarterbacks in the Pac-12 this year, from Jake Browning and Luke Falk at Washington and Washington State to Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen at USC and UCLA, how loaded is the conference at that position?
It's loaded, man. It's as loaded as it's ever been. I mean, you got to go back to, you know, you think of and I think it was 88, 89, Troy Aikman, Rodney Pete in Los Angeles. I mean, it's fire right now. I mean, you're in this community, man. You look at what's going on with Darnold and Josh. I mean, these are two, if they want to come out early, top five draft picks, in my opinion. And they've got really unique narratives. Josh was top guy in the country coming out. Sam wasn't even known. I remember the day that we found him. We were in Oakland at the Elite 11 regional camp, and I look over at Trent Dilfer, and he and I are kind of the coaches with the rest of our staff, and say, he looks like Andrew Luck. You know, and I, when he got to SC, my first thought was he's going to go to New York twice, once to for the Heisman and potentially once to be one of the top picks in the draft. And he just has those types of tools. And then we forget that Jake Browning was a Heisman, you know, front runner for a large part of the season last year and one of the top, I mean, in the list of the vote getters. Luke Falk is going to be breaking every record in the history of the Pac-12 record books as a passer. And I think the future of this conference is also here. You look at Steven Montez of Colorado, the defending Pac-12 South champs. He's a future star, and even Justin Herbert started as a true freshman at Oregon. So the depth is here in this conference at that position. It's what the conference is known for, and they're worthy of all the praise. I can't wait to see how they take the next step in their evolution, specifically the four that you referenced.
Yogi Roth, Pac-12 football analyst, joining us once again. Yogi, what about Josh Rosen? Now, he had that monster freshman year. He had a ton of hype coming into last season, but had that sophomore year end badly, or early, I should say, due to an injury. Now all the hype is about Darnold. So how do you think Rosen responds, and how do you expect him to show up this year?
You know, I'll be honest, man. I think there's a narrative around Josh that I disagree with around the country that, you know, kind of talks about him. Is he too smart for his own good sometimes? You know, people could, it's been easy to jump on the negative bandwagon, I think, at times for him. And I think we got to step back for a second. I've known Josh since he was 16. He's a special young man. Number one, he's special with his mind. I mean, he's a one percenter. He's a different type of thinker. The way that he was raised, he's going to challenge and ask the why for everything. And then from a football acumen standpoint, he's as good as any guy I've been around, whether that's guys in the NFL or college, in terms of how he views the game and can understand and put the pieces together. But one of the most dynamic stories, I think, this year in college football will be he and Jed Fish. If you go back to Jed Fish's career, the OC at UCLA, it's a guy who has a tennis background just like Josh. He didn't even play high school football due to injury. Learned from Steve Spurrier as a student assistant. From there, was one of the first hires by Tom Coughlin when they started the Jaguars in the expansion franchise. Went and learned under Shanahan with the Broncos, was with Pete with the Seahawks. Has bounced around, obviously, most recently at Michigan. And now that relationship, I think, is going to allow Josh to flourish. Will his numbers be amazing? I don't know. When I look at what they have at the skill positions at receivers, who knows what their offensive line will be like. But I think the mantra Rosen's, you know, utilized this offseason is, let me get 1% better. And when he came to the Elite 11 Finals and spoke to our quarterbacks and was really candid about his growth and what he's learned from being in the L.A. market, throwing for over 300 yards in the first game in the history of his college career, and then finally taking a step back when he was injured and say, you know what, let me just soak this all in. Let me just really get grounded and say, okay, I might have gotten over my skis a little bit and some things that I've done in my past. Let me regroup and literally go day by day. And I think we're going to see much more mature Josh Rosen on a ton of levels. And I think he's going to thrive this year. Do they win 10 games? I don't know about that. But I think he puts himself in position to be the best version of himself at a young age, man. And let's be honest. We expect these QBs to be these political figures, be perfect everywhere, and we forget that they're 19 years old and all of a sudden thrust into the spotlight. So I think his injury last year was probably the best thing that ever happened to Josh Rosen's career, and I think he rips it this fall.
Yogi Roth joining us. He's a filmmaker and a New York Times bestselling author as well. Yogi, you mentioned Pete Carroll. Of course, you worked with him. In fact, the two of you wrote a book together, so you understand his philosophy and how he approaches challenges. Earlier this offseason, there was an ESPN piece about the Seahawks defense and the reported negative feelings that they may have had towards Russell Wilson and an inability to let go of that Super Bowl loss. So knowing Pete Carroll the way you know him, how do you think he goes about dealing with those issues within that team?
You know what's cool about Pete? He's a lot like you. I love listening to your show. You just deal with things head on, and that's him. You know, he is not going to beat around the bush, and whether it's, you know, right after that Super Bowl loss, where obviously there's a lot of discussion about should he have handed it off, did he throw it, why'd they do it, all that. He dealt with it. You saw it in the locker room afterwards, and he talked about it with his team immediately. And it's one of those things that you got to just keep working on. You know, you talk to any high performer, and they're not going to tell you the amount of games they won. They'll remember the exact games they lost. That's Pete. You know, that's how he was at SC. That's how he is there. He can remember those moments, but he calls them teachable moments. And I think they start with yourself, and he went to work on it. He went to work on it with his squad. And I think he just approaches it head on. And that's the type of competitor he is. You know, I love that mentality of, okay, is there an issue here? Let's talk about it. Let's deal with it. and away we go. And that's the type of guy that he's always been. I think that's why when you see his teams, they play with this, you know, kind of quote-unquote absence of fear. You know, there's no hesitation. That's why you see him go for it all the time on fourth downs, because they're going to kind of let it rip and celebrate the game, in my opinion, the way it should be celebrated, which isn't playing scared. And I think when you look at his team, if there are any issues, and I'm not there every day, man, but they deal with them and they talk about them and things don't get buried. And that was a huge takeaway I learned from him as a young age. And I think that's the way you got to deal with any type of conflict, especially in an era, which is now when you're dealing with a lot of guys that came in that were, you know, chip on the shoulder, late round draft picks, free agents that have become superstars in the NFL. And I think you do that whether you're in college with now 5-star prospects or if you do it, you do it that way if you're in the league.
Yogi Roth joining us for a few more moments. Now, Yogi, you spent a little time with my guy Gary V a couple of weeks back. How did that go for you? Talk to me about that. What was that like?
Oh, it was awesome, man. I love seeing your posts and even the pinned tweet that you have. I mean, Gary V's fire, man. I mean, we went in, and you know what I love about what Clay Helton's doing is he's really impacting his players off the field. And really, there's a ton of coaches in the Pac-12 that are doing that right now. So we bring Gary V in and talk about the idea that everybody is a storyteller. And, you know, I opened the event off with, how many of you consider yourself storytellers in the room? 105 athletes. And three hands were raised. And I said, well, how many of you have Snapchat? And every hand went up. And I said, you're all storytellers. So let's start thinking in that way. And we had this really unique conversation. You know Gary Vee, man. He's no BS. He's just going to shoot you straight. And he did that with these young men. And none of them knew who he was. I think there was one athlete who had a clue who he was coming in, which was pretty interesting. And he was straight fire, talking about branding, talking about storytelling, talking about, look, be your authentic self, because that's eventually what's going to come out. So we had a very open and candid conversation. I think Gary Vee is really unique in terms of how he views, obviously, the market in terms of what he invests in, but also how authentic he is when he reached a high level of success. And I think we see people change all the time. When they become a head coach, they've got to be a quote-unquote head coach. Or they become a millionaire or the host of the Jim Rome Show, you got to be a certain host. But you're calling it just like you would back in the day if you were talking smack with your boys, you know, talking about whatever you're talking about in high school or college football. And that's what I kind of liked about him. And I think the players really started to think about, okay, how am I messaging myself? And most importantly, how am I in this environment of major college athletics utilizing the brand that I'm at, which is USC, you could argue the most powerful brand in the country, at least in sports and entertainment with the community that LA is. How am I utilizing it to make sure that when my career is over, I've leveraged myself so I have a nice opportunity afterwards? Because, you know, in most careers, you spend 30 years and you could be a lawyer and you're set, right? You don't start till you're 22 and you go down that path. Athletes, we start when we're 5 years old, and sometimes we're done at 25, 30, lucky if we're 35. What do we do next? And that was a big part of the conversation. And Gary Vee was straight fire.
You nailed that. You nailed that. That's exactly what he's about. That's exactly what that message is. All right, now, before you go, I know you love football. Your slogan is, how great is ball? But football is not the only thing in your life. You've been doing some traveling this year. Where did you go, and what was the experience like?
Yeah, man. You know, it's been an awesome offseason for me, you know, on a couple fronts. I went over to Israel and created this documentary series called We All Speak Ball. And it's one of my favorite phrases of all time. And I've been in now over 30 countries and where I can't speak the language, or they're war-torn communities. And I do it every offseason. And I just roll out a ball, whether it's football, soccer, basketball, it doesn't matter. And all of a sudden, it cuts through any tension. And my mom, I don't know if you know this, but she was born over in Israel, and I wanted to go connect with her. And, you know, you and I have talked a lot about the film I did called Life in a Walk about my dad and his path, and I wanted to explore where she came from. So I went over to Haifa and just dropped into the community, and simultaneously, they've got American football over there. It's actually backed by Robert Kraft. You know, he's founded a league, and they've got tackle football, flag, men's, women's, and it's sold out. I'm talking Friday night, just like you're in, you know, West Texas, going off. And for me to drop into that community, you know, obviously I've got roots there and a history there, it's pretty powerful. And I mirror that documentary, that short film that we did, with another one that I just released called Protector. I did it with Alexis Jones, about basically telling athletes that you can be the cure to ending sexual violence instead of the problem. And I look at those two pieces, and it's just a reminder that everything you do and everything that I'm trying to do around the power of play extends so far beyond just the court or the pitch or the field. And if we're not doing that, if we're not having those conversations like you obviously are today with all the stuff going on around the country and around the world of sports, then I don't think we're really doing our fair share and our responsibility. So for me, man, this off season has been absolutely ridiculous. I can't wait, though, to get to media day and get going. And and really get around the game and celebrate these kids and let it rip.
Yo, good for you, man. You are attacking it. You are just killing it. He's a Pac-12 football analyst. He is a filmmaker, a New York Times bestselling author, also the host of the Life Without Limits podcast. Yogi Roth, our guest. Yogi, great talking to you. Always look forward to it. And it's great to have you back on the show, man. Thanks so much. We'll do it again soon.
Yeah, bro. Hey, send some love out to Trapper. I heard him yesterday on your show, man. I know he's trying to kick some ass there fighting cancer. So tell him he's got all the support from this end in the world that he could possibly imagine.
Mom, man, I appreciate you saying that, and I know he does too. Now, before Lef MacGyvered my locks and he SWAT-teamed this studio last year, there was a common theme rolling with the Smack-Off, and it started to feel like the year of the cameo. Now, the cameo can work. The cameo can show how much clout and cred a caller has. It's why live studio audiences lose their minds when a special guest star busts out into sitcom sound stages that you don't expect, or when a rock star has another star shock everybody and walk out and do a number or two. I mean, game respects game. Now, do you need cameos? Of course not. Did Lef need Rich Smackerman to cameo in that call to win it all? No, he didn't, but it helped. It definitely helped. It didn't win him the title, but it had something to do with him ripping that crown. But Lef was not the first. He was only the latest. Let's go ahead and take a look back at some of the best cameos over the years, because that was far from the first. You go all the way back to 1997. 97. Last year may have been the year of the cameo, but it goes way back to 97, when none other than Terrence in Sierra Madre came on with his brother.
In closing, Rome, I'd just like to say, what an honor
hey,
it is.
Terrence, what are you reading over there?
Shut up. I'm not reading anything, okay?
Okay, whatever.
As I was saying, Rome, before I was so rudely interrupted. Hey, turn the damn stereo off. I'm trying to win the smack off.
Hey, Terrence, what makes you the boss of me?
This does.
Whoa, Terrence, put the gun down. I won't turn the stereo on again, I promise.
Too late, Buck.
That felt well below average, Terrence.
Well, I guess I gotta go, Romy.
20 years ago. 20 years ago. That call happened longer than some of you have been alive. 20 years ago. And can I tell you, 20 years ago, that was kind of funny right now. 20 years ago, that was like the funniest thing ever. Once again, Terrence may have been the best of the old school. And I have no idea what happened to Terrence. I have no idea where he is, and not to be dark about it, I have no idea if he's even amongst the rest of us. I really don't know. And at this point, I'm not sure I want to know. I prefer to think about what used to be with this cat, because in the history of this show, there has never been another caller like Terrence in Sierra Madre. And I hate that the new breed knows almost nothing about Terrence or his calls. I hate that. That call was 20 years ago. Terrence never won. So Terrence probably, I mean, certainly is without question, the best caller never to win. And he might be the best caller, period. Terrence was incredible. And I have no idea where he is or what happened to him. Mark in Hollywood, going back to 2016. That's one we probably should have seen coming. Every single time Lee Jenkins would come into the jungle as a guest, every clone would thumb out the same exact joke about how Lee sounds exactly like Mark in Hollywood. So Mark addressed that by actually bringing Lee in on his call to give us one of the greatest side-by-side comparisons of all time.
Yeah, it's almost as if we both sound like two giddy tween girls getting ready for our first Justin Bieber concert.
Yeah, we sound like what I imagine Mike Tyson would sound like if he inhaled a bunch of helium right before a prostate exam. But, you know, on the bright side, Lee, it's nice to share this with somebody.
Yeah, I feel like we're definitely on the same page, almost as if...
we finish each other's sentences?
Exactly. So if I were to say I'm 99% sure that...
Brad and Corona has a dead fish handshake?
Or if I said I know for certain that...
Brad owns both Home and Away Riley Cooper jerseys.
And if I were a betting man, I would bet it was really Brad who was running Tate while asking Swaggy P about his side piece and then sold the tape to TMZ only to spend the money on beer and bail for Johnny Manziel. Damn, drop that beat, Lee.
Good on Lee. Well done, Mark. That call may win in any other year. That's how strong the field's gotten. That was last year. Then you've got Caleb in Green Bay the year before. Caleb has been in the smack off twice. Both times he's come with a cameo. Last year, he rolled with his mom, and it worked. It worked for him because it played right into his strategy. defuse the bomb by making fun of yourself first. But the more impressive cameo that he pulled off came in his first smack off when he pulled two jungle favorites in on his call.
Thank you to the XR4TI for voting for me, and thank you to the Pimp in the Box for making Green Bay, Wisconsin, title town once again. Because in case you forgot, a couple of my buddies wanted to remind you of something.
Hey, Jim Rome, it's Randy and Jason Sklar. And you know what the smack off is? It's a walrus game.
We'll be right back.
You talk about playing to the host. Yeah, because the Sklars are made men in the jungle, and getting them in your corner is a solid pull. It earned him the bronze as a rookie. And a shout-out to the brothers Sklar, who are not only extremely talented dudes, but two of the best dudes in the business. Great guys. Then you have Chael Sonnen, 2016. Last year, it was surprising to see Chael not team up with Mike and Indy for the first time in quite some time. But that's because Chael had plans for another tag team partner, one Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Today's not a day to guess. It's not a day to wonder and hypothesize. I gotta know. So what would Stone Cold Steve Austin do? How do we know? Maybe...
Hey, if you want to know what Stone Cold Steve Austin would do in the smack off, on the biggest day of the biggest show in Jim Rome Jungle? Hell, son, I'd show up, I'd raise as much hell as possible, and then I'd leave. So crown, Chael, and that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Oh, yeah, there. That's what I needed. Thank you, Steve.
That's what he needed. Hey, look, Chael, the thing is, he doesn't need that. He doesn't need to roll with a winger. He's one with a wingman, and he's one without one. But know this, if he wants, he can pull just about anybody with his call. Chael, to me, is a huge wild card. We know Chael has the game to win, but we have no idea what he's going to do this year other than bring the fire, because he said in his RSVP he was way too nice last year. But he's gone with the cameo. That was a big cameo. And then speaking of Chael, back in 2014, Mark in Hollywood held a smack-off listening party at Big Wang's. Mike in Indy infiltrated the party, but he himself was accompanied with a backup.
I told everyone a few months back that we flipped a high-ranking official from the West Coast Mafia to the Midwest. And when I say something's going to happen, it's going to happen. If I tell you a mouse can push a house, don't ask me how, just hook him up. If I tell you the moon is made of cheese, you can get you some crackers.
What if I tell you two of America's most wanted are in the same mother bleeping place at the same mother bleeping time?
Go easy on them, Chael.
Guys, don't worry about the things they found in my system. Be grateful for all the things they did. Was there ever a doubt in anyone's mind, Chael P., the godfather, your mother's favorite trash talker, Jim Rome's favorite horse in the race, win its show?
I mean, for those who remember, that was easily one of the holy bleep moments, not only of the smack up, but of this entire program. That was a holy crap. Are you kidding me? We had no idea the 2012 champ Chael was even going to show up. We couldn't find him that day. We literally could not find him that day. We had no idea where he was, and we didn't know whether or not he would show. Then he teams up with another jungle legend. You know, kind of like Golden State teaming up with KD. If they waited to introduce KD in the middle of the finals. So in terms of the cameo, potentially it is a good play, potentially, if you do it right. But remember, if you roll with a cameo, the key is making it part of your call and using it to your advantage. It can't be your call. It can't be the call. It can't be a crutch. Looking forward to see who brings whom into the fold next week. So a quick back look at some of the best cameos during the smack off. We are joined by third baseman Travis Shaw. Team's coming off a tough series in Pittsburgh, but you're still in first place in the division, as I mentioned. So first, what's the mood among the players as you get ready to face Philadelphia tonight?
The mood's still good in the clubhouse. We obviously haven't played good since the All-Star break. Pitching has actually been pretty good. It's just offensively we've kind of hit a little bit of a rough patch here. But the mood in the locker room's still very, very positive. Like you said, we're still in first place late July. So I think everybody's still excited, and we're looking to get back on the winning side tonight.
Travis Shaw, my guest. You know, the Brewers were coming off that 73 win last season. So outside the clubhouse, the expectations were not necessarily that high, yet here you are in late July and you are in first place. When did you first start thinking that this team had a chance to do something special?
I saw it in May a little bit. We were able to kind of rebound from a little bit tough stretches early on. We'd lose two or three straight, and we were able to right the ship pretty quickly. And then there was a series against the Dodgers. I don't know if it was in May or June, but we actually had all three of those games won. We only ended up winning one of those, but we let two get away from us late in the game. And I think that's when everybody in the clubhouse kind of started believing that, hey, the Dodgers, obviously, they're the class of the NL right now, this year. And we hung with them. We've actually had that series won all three games, and I think that showed everybody we could play with anybody.
Hmm. Brewers third baseman Travis Shaw joining us. Now, you were drafted by the Red Sox. You came up with them, but then you were traded during the last offseason. Shortly after Milwaukee acquired you, manager Craig Counsell told you you're his guy third base, and he was not looking to platoon you with anybody. You look back on that conversation, what did that mean to you and your confidence?
It meant a lot. I mean, after what I went through the last 2 months of the season, trying to learn how to be a platoon player, I had never been that. Obviously, that it didn't work out for me. Got all out of whack, and then to hear go to a new organization and then have faith in you and then want you to be their guy, it meant a lot going into this season and instilled some confidence.
Now, I wonder, I mean, is that the whole thing was just a matter of opportunity and you knowing that you were going to go out there and a manager who believed in you? Because you look at the numbers you're putting up, I mean, it's been a dramatic change. You're having a huge year. Was it just the opportunity, or did you do some things in the offseason to put you in this position as well?
A little bit of both, I think. I mean, opportunity is all you ever want in baseball. And for me, last year was my first full season in the big leagues. So obviously everybody goes through their learning curves and slumps in their first full season. And I went through it the second half of last season. I think what I went through last year was going to help me in my career moving forward. And I made some adjustments this offseason, and everything's kind of paying off right now.
Travis Shaw, my guest, you know, not to belabor the point, but it's such a hard game. It is such a hard game. And when you talk about the adjustments you made, you have a philosophy, which I find really interesting. You've talked about not caring. Now, that's not what that sounds. It's not that you don't care about baseball, but more that you can't read into everything and you can't get too high or too low, and that it's such a long season. So how do you go about not caring in a good way?
Yeah, it took a lot for me to get to this point. I mean, last year I got ate up pretty good with getting benched and everything that I was going through the second half of the season, and then probably right before the last week before the playoffs, it kind of struck me that hey, this isn't working. You just need to chill out a little bit, and went into the off season, kind of reset the whole thing, and then coming into this year, I was pretty focused on trying not to get caught up in all the failures and the negativity that baseball can bring. And whether it's an 0-for-4 or an 0-for-15, I mean, it's going to turn back in your favor eventually. And for me, it's helped keep me relaxed throughout the season so far.
Now, you're killing it, and you're on a first-place team. And whenever I have a Brewer on this show, the topic of playing in Milwaukee and in front of those fans in particular always comes up. What's your experience been like in that city and with the Brewer fans?
Brewer fans are awesome. They're so positive. The attendance this year has been really good. The fans are starting to get excited. We can tell. We can feel the energy from them in the home games. And we're on a long road trip right now. We're right in the middle of it. And as soon as we go home, we have a three-game set against the Cubs. And I think everybody's looking forward to getting back home and getting in front of those fans.
Travis, it's strange because I've done this long enough now that I remember when I was coming up, I was always younger than everybody I interviewed, and now I'm interviewing kids of guys that I used to interview. Your father's no different. Jeff Shaw was a two-time All-Star. As a reliever, he has more than 200 career saves to his name. What was it like growing up the son of a Major League ball player?
He kind of shaped me to who I am. I mean, I went to the field with him all the time, and when he was out in L.A., his last 3 years of his career, and everything that I've gone through, he's gone through in his career. Obviously, we're different positions, but having that firsthand experience at home and being able to call somebody and talk to when things hit the fan a little bit, it's been big for me.
You mentioned he was with the Dodgers, so you spent part of your time in Ohio and then part of it right here in Southern California. What do you remember about what it was like to go to Dodger Stadium as a kid?
I just remember going there every day, hanging out with a couple other kids that went to the stadium. We'd go out, shag during BP, and then just kind of roam around Dodger Stadium throughout the game. And that's kind of where I grew up a little bit. That's where I learned to love the game. And Dodger Stadium still holds a very special place in my heart.
Travis, can I say this? I mean, we talked about some things that were kind of heavy as it relates to baseball, but it's nothing compared to a much bigger picture. And last month, your newborn daughter underwent multiple open heart surgeries. She was born with a severe heart condition, which you knew about. but what was it like to have to go through something that gut-wrenching, and how is she doing right now?
Yeah, that was, I mean, we knew going in that it was going to be tough, and then I don't think I realized how tough it was going to be when you see kind of, she's born, you're hanging out with her for 3-4 days, she looks fine, and then they just wheel her away, and you can't see her or hold her for, it ended up being 3 weeks, and that was the hardest part, not being able to hold her, just seeing her hooked up to all the machines, the breathing tubes, it was definitely an eye-opening experience for me, and it put a lot of things into perspective. It goes back to the not caring thing. You realize there's a lot more important issues than just baseball all the time, and she's doing a lot better now. She's getting better. She'll have another procedure here coming up here in a couple months, but hopefully it won't be as severe as the first one.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Clones, what's going on? Welcome to the jungle. I'm Jim Rome. I am back. Question is for how long? But I am back, and it's good to be back. In fact, check that. It's great to be back.
Email.
Welcome back, Jimmy. Here are the highlights. Forward passes are now allowed in the NFL. A festival showcasing feats of strength, speed, and endurance was invented near Athens. It's gone a week, bro. And thank God my next break is 2 weeks.
Yeah! His little legs, his little core, his little
head. I think that he's got the best rap I've ever heard of any athlete in any sport since I've done this.
A school bag on stage. You can't even read.
I've interviewed thousands of athletes. This guy's got the best rap I've ever heard. It's not going to help him in the ring
against Floyd Mayweather.
50 strippers on his payroll this man.
But I'll tell you what it did. He's got no business getting in the ring with Floyd Mayweather.
Daryl Morey.
If you took players on every team, not on Cleveland and Golden State, could you assemble a team that would for sure be Golden State? It's going to be a tough road to beat them.
Shields hits crisp, and Cole's going to head out.
Cole crisp.
Before that, I told Tito, I'm going to Tito. I'm probably going to get kicked out of this game. So I charged the mound, and James Shields threw a 95-mile-per-hour hook at me. I went into get-out-the-way mode and probably would have landed a cleaner punch, but Navarro, he ended up doing his job, landed a glancing blow.
Bounce, 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 bounce. R. Kelly's not emailing me.
Dude, no.
What do you mean I got to
no,
get out, Alvin? What do you mean by that? To quote Alvin, I don't see nothing wrong. That's about enough, Alvin. On that note, I will get out.
After discussions with Kurt.
Might be time then for Bartholomew Allen to step away from these negotiations and let somebody else step in. Couldn't have jacked that up any worse.
Kurt is obviously in.
Matt Ryan.
You know, I've always felt like the ones that get away, for whatever reason, have been the ones that I've thought about more. You know, I probably hate losing more than I like winning. Now, maybe that's not the right way, but that's kind of how I'm wired.
Dan Wetzel is everywhere. Why are you such a staunch advocate for Busch Light?
You drink a whole bunch of them and you wake up the next day, you hardly even know it. Tastes good, refreshing. It's like an anti-hangover because I think it's mostly water.
Dave in Wisconsin.
Busch Light is a beautiful, beautiful thing. I got 430 packs in my garage.
At any given sitting, how many of those Busch Lights do you slam?
Oh, I choose not to count, Jim.
Classy, my man.
A little nervous to call in because I thought maybe I wasn't cracked up for the radio caller thing when I got a little nervous talking to the Sparrow. He's not really that intimidating, but
this is how we communicate with each other. Justin Fuente.
This season, we can't dip our toes in the pool, see if it's warm or cold or if we like it and ease our way in. We've got to go get on the high dive and jump in the pool.
Their next level, going with a Guns N' Roses video. Big shout out and big props to Virginia Tech. Ben Mesrick, the naked mole rat.
The naked mole rat lives 35 years, while regular rats only live 3 years. So in this lab, they're trying to figure out why that is.
Ben, let's get some phone calls in here.
They do release mammoth. What would the impact on the people be?
When they insert this embryo, if it's going to be the same.
How do we protect them from being hunted?
How does that preserve the permafrost, right, the increased activity of the ground would heat it?
Have you guys considered using a different species for doing the gestation? Such as, like, Rob or Rex Ryan.
The best questions I've gotten in my entire book tour.
What? Say it again.
Best questions I've gotten on my entire book tour.
From the clones.
From the
it
clones.
Is the smartest half hour of radio I think I've ever done.
Right.
So if anybody should know not to stick a piece of fish in the microwave on a day where we have business and company, you'd think it would be Alvin. Dude, if you told me we were having company, I wouldn't have done that. You know that.
Philip Rivers.
But shoot, I'm a big kid out there that loves to play when it comes to the game, and I think that finally, at least I hope, I know the people that know me do, that it is received that way now.
Now today is my 20th anniversary, you know that, right? Makes me think about my wedding night. Hey-oh! Happy anniversary, sweetheart. 20 freaking years.
It was my property. I wasn't there to steal from anybody.
I don't know. If it were me and I had spent 9 years there already, I think that I'd just roll out there and say, I'm sorry. Bad mistake.
Audio of me beat the real me, but never mind. I'm in the competition, and I just want to say that Vic in NoCal is a big
Derek Carr is my guest. I'm curious, why was Kobe your guy?
He's the most competitive person I could ever find. I don't care who you put next to me. I'm going to outwork you. I'm going to bite your head off to try and win that game.
We're talking to Mike Leach.
Heck, I got fired and they didn't even pay me for 2009, and that's the last time that Texas Tech has won 9 games. Chancellor at the end, Kent Hansen, so I will name his name, who is a liar, a cheat, and a thief.
And a thief.
Don't expect the truth to come out of his mouth.
A conflict-free
white man is all that's left.
My vote is to grant your parole effective.
You'll be out. Well, I think this guy beat that rap.
We discovered a pattern of conduct that is not consistent with our expectations.
The old misdialed the hooker excuse. Mike Freeman.
Jim, I'm sorry, I'm putting my burner phone away real quick.
Burning.
Watch Star Trek like Jim does every night, like me. Dude, just chill.
I mean, keep my name out of your mouth, Mike. I've never seen Star Trek. You know I would never do that.
No retreat, no surrender, all in next Friday and beyond.
Send some love off to Trap. Tell him he's got all the support from this end in the world that he could possibly imagine.
O.J. Simpson, not busted, masturbating in prison. Oh. There you go.
Man, you do your homework.
But I'm 9 days off the bush.
The Brooklyn hipsters hate me.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Jim. Appreciate it.
Good night now!
Good job, Albie. That's going to do it for now. If you don't mind, on the way out, hit subscribe if you have not done that already. Leave a review if you haven't done that already. And tell a friend who needs the Daily Jungle in their life all about this thing. It was a great week. Enjoy your weekend. And come Monday, it is officially Smack Off Week. See you then.